Okay, so Ryan Tovim, good afternoon, Erev Tov in Israel. It's a pleasure to welcome back Tag Team 2. We're into round 3 of our 4-part series. It's a pleasure to welcome Jennifer Raskis to give her second in this series on Tshuva in Tanakh. And today we're going to be discussing the Yosef story, I believe. Always a fascinating story. And Vakasha, we're looking forward. Okay.
Great. So good afternoon or good evening. Everyone, thank you again to Rabbi Kalman for this opportunity and for the incredible Torah and Torah community that he is giving to the world. Thank you so much. And a thank you to my chavruta and partner in this series, Dr. Rebecca Winter, who's here with us today. And thank you all for being here. So to recap, Rebecca and I are taking a few weeks to look at some of the stories in Tanakh and think about how these stories can help us focus, and complete a tshuva process. So what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be looking at the Yosef stories, which is a story I know that many of us are familiar with, but we're going to be looking at it specifically in terms of what it can teach us in terms of tshuva, specifically when it comes to interrelationships, to relationships with others. As always, we are going to start with looking at part of Rambam's Hilchot Tshuva, and we're going to see if the Yosef stories can bring some light to some of the things that the Rambam puts forth to help us in our tshuva process. So does that sound good? Are we all ready? I would like to point out that I wore my Ketonet Pasim shirt, my shirt that reminds me of Joseph's multicolor coat for the occasion. If there's anything around you that brings you color or joy or reminds you of Yosef, feel free to bring that closer to get into the Yosef spirit as well. So with that, I am going to share the screen and we can get started. So let's start with the Hilchot Tshuva. We're going to look specifically, this is in the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, at Dalet Bet. Now, this is the second Mishnah in the fourth parak, and Rambam opens the fourth parak talking about 24 different times when tshuva is not enough to bring a full repentance to the sinner. So the first in Aleph, in 4 Aleph, or Dalet Aleph 4:1, he talks about maybe it's about the sin itself. Maybe the sin itself is so big or so bad that it stalls the tshuva process, what you actually did. And then in our Mishnah, he's going to talk about more the person. Is there something about a person that prevents the person himself from actually succeeding when he is doing the own tshuva process? And what I want to do is the Rambam gives 5 different types of people who may basically become a stumbling block to themselves in achieving tshuva. I want to look at the first one he gave and the last one he gave. So the first example of a person and the last example of a person, and see if we can put those two together and learn something deeper from putting them together. So let's start. So the Rambam starts. So here are the 5 things out of the 24 that we just mentioned, the Elohim, and they are, the first one is haporesh min hatzibor, someone who takes himself out of the community. Now, for the Rambam, taking yourself out of the community, taking yourself, especially if it's away from all of Israel, is really, really bad. Actually, in Hilchot Tshuva 3:11, he says it's so bad that person, even if he's doing mitzvot, but he's doing it away from the rest of the community, he may not get olam haba. He may not actually have a portion in the world to come. So to the Rambam, taking yourself out of the community is not a good thing at all. Let's look at the next one, which is actually the 5th one. V'hasona et ha-tochachot sheharei lo hinyech lo derech tshuva. So if someone who takes himself out of the community may act as a stumbling block for himself to acquire tshuva, and the Rambam actually goes ahead and says, well, if he took himself out of the community, maybe the whole community was bad and they all did tshuva and he wasn't there for it, so he doesn't get the tshuva. Another person who may act as a stumbling block to himself is someone who can't accept criticism. Why? Shehatochacha, we're in the yellow. Shehatochacha goremet litshuva. Because tochacha, criticism, can actually help someone achieve tshuva. Shebizman shemodi'in lo le'adam chatav, umachlimin oto chozer b'tshuva. When someone realizes that their sins are actually known to others, there's someone else out there who knows about it, right? Because if you're criticizing it, it means you know about it. If someone else is out there knowing about it, it might bring shame onto you, and then you might do something to change it. So either you didn't think your action was so bad in the first place, or you know it was bad, but that wasn't motivation enough for you to stop. But once someone knows about it, that might convince you that it's time to do tshuva. And as the Rambam says, that's actually what a lot of the Nevi'im, what their roles were, was to tell Bnei Yisrael that they know, they can see what Bnei Yisrael are doing, it's not good, and that that itself led to tshuva. And here's the part where I want us to focus on. Lefichach, therefore, tzarich lahamid b'kol kal v'kal m'Yisrael, every community in Israel needs chacham, someone who's has wisdom, chacham gadol, a lot of wisdom, v'zakein, and they are mature, v'yiras shamayim nu'arav, and they've always been God-fearing, and here's the key part, v'ahuv lahem, someone who is beloved to the community. That person, shiyem ochiach l'rabim u'machsivim b'tshuva, that person is the one who should offer the criticism to the rest of the community, and through that offering, the community will do tshuva. Now, the juxtaposition that I want to bring in is that haporesh min hatzibor is someone who separated himself from the community, is someone who is an obstacle to tshuva, whereas someone who is beloved to the community is someone who can actually save a community, even ones that don't like criticism. They may actually be able to save the community by offering the criticism the community needs to achieve tshuva. So here's my question. I'm going to stop sharing for a second. My question is, why can't someone who's poresh min hatzibor be the one that offers the criticism, right? Let's think for a second. Why might it be a good thing? Let's remember the poresh min hatzibor, the reason he doesn't get tshuva is because the community, when they do tshuva, he's not there for it, which actually tells us that he, the poresh min hatzibor, was potentially part of a community that was bad. So what's so bad? If your community is doing bad things, they're not good, what's so bad about separating yourself from the community and then offering the criticism then? What's a positive about hearing criticism from someone who is outside of your community? You can put it in the chat also. And I see there is something in the chat. Oh, those are the sources.
Maybe they have a different perspective.
Yeah, totally. Especially because we know that the community itself was already not doing well. So if someone goes outside the community, maybe they learn new things, or maybe there was something already in them that had a different perspective. And then they're able to actually offer something to the community. They may seem more objective, Judith Schwartz says. Interesting. So whoever is writing from iPad, I love the point, which is that Moshe and Aaron were two different types of leaders. Moshe was always seen as separate from the community, and Aaron was always seen as part of the community, and Aaron was more beloved. So that's very interesting. So I think that's true. I think that there are certainly times when we can think that it might be helpful to have someone from outside the community, whether they're more objective or they've learned something else. It could be great for them to be the ones to offer criticism. But the Rambam is clearly telling us that if you want people to actually change, to actually do tshuva, it's better to have someone from within the community. So now let's think the opposite. Why might people respond better to someone from within their community?
No, I'm just going to say they understand.
Yeah. I love that. Yes, they understand. So tell me more. What might they understand?
Oh, they understand the problems that are going on within the community.
Yeah.
And they can try to work with that person to deal with what the problems are.
Yes, I think that is very true. And we're going to see that in the Yosef stories, that when you're part of the community, there's a level of understanding about the circumstances or the specific individuals. There's an additional level of understanding that can really, really help the way that you then offer criticism, because you know. So what, to say differently, what's lacking if you're not part of the community? If you don't have that understanding, what might you think about the community? Okay, now I'm going to look at, so while we're thinking about that, I'm going to look at the chat. Oh, great. Oh, I love that. So Alana is saying that there's a familial feeling that we know that the person has an interest in the community changing, right? If you're saying, listen, I know things aren't going well. It's kind of like if there's a boat that's not doing so well. If a guy jumps ship and is on the, right, and is on the raft and is trying to tell you what to do, that's one thing. But you know the guy's going to end up getting to shore, whether or not the boat makes it. But if someone's on the boat with you and there's literally a hole and water's coming out and that person is trying to stuff the towels or whatever it is, you know that that person has as much interest as you do as the boat being saved, as the boat making it to shore. Okay, let's see what else. They know the person and the conditions. Yes. Ah, so Naomi, very interesting that you're giving us an example of someone who's outside the community, right? That Yonah himself was outside the community, although he did have a lot of trouble understanding, right, why he was given the job he was. But that is very true. Oh, interesting. Okay, person in iPad, if you can tell us your name, I would love to know it because I love your comments. In our days, it's the congregational rabbi who tends, the person is saying to make better halacha than a yeshiva rabbi. Maybe I'll add to better, more directly unique for the people that they are working with, right? Because they know the people better. They know the details, the backstory. They can be more focused. This is all really, really great. Yes. So I think you are, I think you're all getting to some really important things, which is that when you're within the community, you understand the community better. You know the people, you know the circumstances, and the people themselves can trust you more, right? They trust that you actually have their best interest at heart. So what we're going to do now is we're going to look at the Yosef story and see if, in addition to all these amazing thoughts, if the Yosef story can give us some more insight into the difference between being without or far away from the community and being within. And for our purposes, the community in the story is going to be the brothers. So we're going to see how Yosef relates to his brothers when he is outside of them, when he is within them, when he is far from them, when he is close to them. And we're going to see if maybe some of this can help us understand the Rambam, which then can give us a new insight into a way that we can achieve tshuva when it comes to our interrelationships. Sound good? All right. Okay. Back to share screen. Okay. So let's start our Yosef stories. The Yosef stories start when Yosef is 17. Ela Toldot Yaakov. So, and I will just give you some clues as to what all these colors mean. Besides for looking like the Ketonet Pasim, Yosef's multicolored coat, there is also a logic behind that. If you see the yellow, it's really just to help us get, like, know the details of the story. These are just things we need to know in order to understand what's happening, who, what, when, where, why. The blue means focus a little bit more, because these specific themes, or maybe even words or ideas, I believe are integral for understanding a deeper meaning to the story. And the pink, think of it as like a stop sign. These are the words that are going to be like the leap words, which is like the leap word. It's like the milama ancha, the words that come up again and again that are really going to help us understand some deeper themes in the text. And we're going to look at the Yosef story, but through the metaphor of being outside and being inside. So let's begin. Ela Toldot Yaakov. Yosef ben Shavas Reishana. Yosef is 17. And what's the first thing we learn about him? Hayaro etechav batzon. Now, the English translation here says that he tended his flocks et echav, meaning with his brothers. But I think we can also hear something else going on. He was ro'eh et echav. He was kind of shepherding his brothers, Bitzon, as if they themselves were kind of the sheep. And it goes on, v'hu na'ar et bnei bilha. Here again in the English translation, it says he was a helper. Other mefarshim point out that he belittled them. He made them feel small. Right? So taken together, Yosef is seeing himself as outside of his brothers, separate from his brothers, and more importantly, as superior to his brothers. And what happens when he sees himself as superior? The next blue, Vayeve Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el avihem. Yosef then brings a bad report, bad things about his brothers to his father. So we see already, and this is things that you were pointing out, you don't understand everyone if you are on the outside. You don't understand the people, the conditions. You automatically might see things in a more negative light when you're on the outside. So Yosef sees himself as superior. He brings bad reports to his fathers. And sure enough, the brothers, right? If you want someone to criticize you, it needs to be someone that's beloved, that's from within the community. Do the brothers like this outsider who thinks he's better than them, who, by the way, is only 17, and he's treating them like sheep? Well, not good. They hated him. And here's a stop sign, pink. They couldn't talk to him in peace. And both the word diber and the word shalom are going to come up again. And to make matters worse, Joseph starts having dreams. His dreams involve his brothers bowing down to him. That's not going to win him any popularity points. He told his brothers the dreams. And they hated him even more. And you can see the details if you want to read on your own of one of the dreams. Everyone is a sheaf. All the sheaves bow down to him. In the yellow. Do you really think you're going to rule over us? Are you going to reign over us? If it's possible, they hated him even more. Al chalamotav, about his dreams, va'al devarav, and about the things that he was saying. So again, is Yosef trying to get to know his brothers? Is he asking them any questions? Is he wondering, why? I see you doing this thing. It doesn't really make sense to me. Can you explain to me why you might be doing it? No. He is going straight. He's reporting things to his father. He is seeing himself as ruling over them. And his picture of rulership is what? That everyone bows down to me. This reminds me a lot of the Lion King, when little Lion King, little Simba, is thinking about what it's going to be like to be a king. And all he can think about is how he gets to tell everyone what to do. Similar to the Lion King, Yosef will eventually mature. But so far, we're at the little Simba stage. Okay. Now, I believe if we read this part of the story closely, I believe that Yaakov knew exactly what was going on, the discord between Yosef and his brothers, and that he actually wanted to fix it. So what happens? Yosef's brothers go out and they're shepherding. They're in Shechem, eventually Dotan, and Yaakov sends them. And Yaakov sends Yosef to go find them. Vayomer lo, lech na re'eh et shalom achacha. Now, literally, go see how your brothers are doing, but we already had the word shalom and we knew it meant the relationship between the brothers, right? So, lech na re'eh et shalom achacha could be Yaakov saying, Yosef, you're here. They're there. There's a lot of distance between you. Why don't you go meet your brothers and try to find shalom? Try to find peace. V'hashiveni davar. Yaakov going back to the two things, right? Our two stop sign words, lo yachlu dibro la shalom. Yaakov's telling him, go bring back shalom and davar, a davar that instead of being dibatam ra'ah is actually a davar full of peace. And it's possible that Yosef actually understood what Yaakov wanted him to do, because Yosef sees a man, which is a really random detail that the Torah is giving us, that there's a person and Yosef asks directions. I mean, if I was recording my life and I had to put down every time I asked someone for directions, it would be a really long book. But the Torah wants us to know that he needed directions at this point. And maybe it's because the Torah wants us to know what words he used. When he said to the man what he's doing there, he says, "Et achai anochi mevakesh." Literally, of course, I'm looking for my brothers, but figuratively, "Et achai," my brothers is what I'm looking for, or brotherhood is what I am looking for. And unfortunately, even if Yaakov and Yosef had the best of intentions, which we hope they did, what happens? The brothers see him. Vayiru oto. From what? Oops. From what? Merachok. They see him from a distance. At that point, the distance that Yosef had put between himself and his brothers, where he was superior and they were below him, was just too vast. When they see him coming, they see him from a distance. And when you see someone from a distance, it is way too easy to assume ill intent. Ubeterem yikrav, before he could get close, alehem bitnaklu oto lahamito, they decided to kill him. And what words do they use? Ah, hinei balachal motal azaba. Oh, is the dreamer person coming to come to us? They decide to kill him, and they say, we'll just see what happens to his dreams. Of course, we know that his dreams are actually going to come true, but they don't know that at that point. They believe that they could stop them. So I want to stop the share for a second and check on the chat and ask you, what do you think so far? Does this, how does this reading, does it bring anything new to the way that you've seen the Yosef stories before? What are you thinking about the relationship between Yosef and his brothers? Yes, Joel Mandelbaum is pointing out that Yaakov may have had a role in this. It is a theme throughout Sefer Bereishit that there is one parent who loves another one more than the others. And we hope each generation that they'll learn not to do this, but it doesn't quite work. Yes, I do believe that Yaakov did prompt some of this. And I still think that it is possible that maybe he realized what was happening and wanted a reunion, but you're right. It's possible also that that he was too involved in prompting it. Interesting.
May I ask a question verbally?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. So back in part one, in Bereishit 37:2-5, for the first time ever, and it's the beginning of page two, for the first time ever, as I'm reading this, I'm noticing that it's only the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. So I'm wondering, where are the sons of Leah?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think those specific ones were the ones that he was being na'ar to, right? So I think some of our Mefarshim point out that the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, their mothers didn't have the same status as Leah and Rachel had with Yaakov. So perhaps he like taunted them because of that and held that against them, right? Which we know is not a very nice thing to do, especially if you're looking for a good brotherhood in your future. But you're right. They don't mention the Leah sons. It's possible that he is tending the flocks with them. But he definitely includes them in the dream. And we know he includes them in the dream because he actually tells us the number. There's, you know, this many stars and this many sheaves. And he's definitely including all of them in that process.
Right. And also, okay. Reuven and Yudah, we know, are involved at the, in the pit, you know, at the part with the pit. So yes. I'm wondering when and how they show up.
Yeah, good question. I think they do hear the dreams because, again, Yosef is pretty much including them in the ones that are going to bow down to him. So I think they probably show up there. And we definitely know, as you pointed out, that they are in Dotan, because, as you said, the two of them end up taking lead roles in the story in terms of communication. Reuven always getting it a little bit wrong, and then Yehuda coming in to save it at the end. And one thing that we're going to see later on, Yehuda is actually going to be like hero for how this all gets fixed. We're going to see that soon. Okay, Esther.
Isn't Simeon one of the leaders? And he is definitely Leah's son. And he is really, he seems very much one of the leaders. And I think everybody else is listening to him and Reuven at the time. I don't think they all wanted to see Joseph killed, even though he was a brat, a spoiled brat. But I think that Simeon or Shimon was really a leader in this trial.
Yeah. So we are going to hear Shimon a little bit later. We're not going to read it inside, but Shimon does get a featured role at some point in the story. So yes, he definitely is present at all times. And Reuven, as the oldest, you know, definitely feels responsibility. There's some of them have point out that the reason why Reuven, you know, says that we shouldn't kill Yosef, he uses the word ani, me, a little too much, which makes some of the Mefarshim think that what he's worried about is, as the oldest, that he's going to be held responsible by his father if anything happens to Yosef. So he goes, oh, but what about me?
Yeah.
he does end up taking that role. It's interesting, the contrast between how Reuven is going to react and how Yehuda is going to react. Mm-hmm. But yes, Reuven and Shimon are definitely big parts of the story, and the two oldest. All right. Any other questions? Interesting. Okay. Great comments coming in. Okay. Let's go back. Are we ready for Yosef not to be 17 anymore? We're okay with that? We're not too attached to the 17-year-old, right? We're ready for him to learn some things? Okay. All right. So Yosef, as we know, doesn't get killed, but does get sold to the Ishmaelim. And he ends up becoming a slave in Potiphar's house. Now, what we're going to see is that Yosef, throughout the rest of his life, is going to learn some lessons that are going to help him realize how to interact with others and how not to interact with others. So let's see what happens. The first thing we're going to see is, as you see the title of part two, is that Yosef himself is going to become the victim of divatam ra'ah, of a bad report. So what happens? The story is that Eshet Potiphar, Potiphar's wife, wants Yosef to pay some special attention to her that he does not want to give her. And she ends up lying about the whole situation and getting him into big trouble. So first of all, our word diber or davar, which is a very common word in Tanakh, but when it comes up this many times in a very short amount of time, it is worth paying attention to. What happens? Her husband comes home, but to daber elav kidvarim ha'elah, she tells him the following things, lemor, ba elai ha'eved ha'ivri, asher hivitalanu, this slave, this Hebrew slave that you brought upon us, litzachekbi, he came to, whether it's make fun of me or harass me in some way, he's doing this evil thing to me. Vayihi kiharimi koli, and when I raise my voice to tell him to stop, v'akra v'yazov bido etzli, he left a piece of his clothing with me, v'yanasa chutza. This is my proof that he was here. Otherwise, how would I have this piece of clothing? Clothing comes up a lot of times in Bereishit, right? It was the clothing also that the brothers were going to use to make a ruse that Yosef died. Yaakov himself put on certain clothing to pretend that he was Esav. Clothing is being used as proof. And here it is being used as proof, as in other places, for a lie, for something that didn't happen. Ayhi kishmoa adonav et dvarei ishto, when he heard the words that his wife Eisha Potiphar was saying, Asher Dibra Elav, Leimor, Kidvarim Ha'ela Asali Avadecha, Becharapo. When he hears all these terrible things, he gets really angry, and beats Nehua al Beit HaSohar. He throws Joseph in the jail. So this is the first time that we know of that Yosef is now feeling what it's like to be on the opposite side of the Dibatam Ra'ah. We don't know if what he was saying to his father was completely false. Here we know it is completely false. And we also know that while Yosef is in jail, that God is with him. Vayihi Hashem et Yosef. The Lord was with Yosef. Vayate lav chesed. And he showed him kindness. Vayiten chino be'inav sar beit ha-sohar. And so he showed him so much kindness that the sar beit ha-sohar, the head of the jail, found favor in him. So let's see if these two things help Yosef become a slightly more mature person who can see a little bit more outside of himself. The two things being, he now knows what it's like to be at the end of the Dibatam Ra'ah stick, and Hashem is very much with him and helping him, even when he is literally in, for the second time, a pit. So what happens? So Yosef is in jail, and there's two other people in jail. There's the butler and the baker, and they come to him in the morning. Vayar otam, v'hine zo'afim. And Yosef saw them. Now, if this was anyone else, or almost anyone else, I wouldn't think it's such a big deal that he saw them. But what's Yosef up until now? Who has he really been seeing? Himself, right? It was all about his dreams and his position vis-a-vis his brothers and what, you know, he was very much seeing himself. And now, when we said before, is he asking his brothers questions? Now he does. Vayishal et sarisei paro. He asked the courtiers of Paro. He asked them, Madua pnechem ra'im hayom. He wants to know what's going on with them. When they tell him that they had a dream and they don't know the interpretation, Yosef not only offers to help them with their dreams by helping interpret them, but he says to them, Hello, the Elohim Pitronim. There is going to be an interpretation, but it's going to come from God. Sipru na li. Tell me your dream, and God, through me, will help you with the interpretation. So Yosef is becoming a little more humble, or have a little more humility in a whole bunch of different ways. He's seeing the other people around him, he's asking them questions, and he's acknowledging God's role in this entire process and saying that if he's able to help them, it is only through the grace of God. Okay, I see some stuff in the chat, so I'm gonna take a look. I see that. Yes, litzachek, I completely agree. The litzachek should remind us of the words with Yitzchak, right? The word Litzachek came up a bunch of times, also between Yishmael and Yitzchak, and there's a lot of sensitivity there that Sarah had to the whole thing. So yes, I do believe that we are supposed to think back to Yitzchak. Right. And again, no, it's not necessarily that both of them were untrue, answering iPad's question. Okay, so let's keep going. So, and then we know that Yosef ends up not only helping with the butler and the baker's interpretation of dreams, but he's going to end up helping Paro. Vayomar Paro el Yosef, chalom chalamti, I had a dream, upator ein oto, v'ani shamati alecha, and I heard about you, leimor tishma chalom liftor oti. I heard that you know how to interpret a dream and its meanings. And Yosef, again, literally in the face of royalty, he remains the same type of humility when he says, Vayan Yosef et Paro, Bil Adi Elohim Ya'aneh. It is through me that God will give the answer to your dreams. Again, putting himself below God. And he uses the word shalom, right? There was no shalom between the brothers. Yaakov wanted him to find shalom. Now we see that Yosef is doing two things. First of all, when it comes to dreams, he's not only focusing on his dreams, he's focusing on the dreams of others, and he's helping others understand their dreams. And the second thing is that he's already starting to bring shalom, peace, to others. It might not yet be peace to his brothers, but he is now the vehicle through which peace can come. And he's doing it all with recognizing God's role in this process. And we see that Paro hears him, and he says, ah, this is a person who has Ruach Elohim, right? He acknowledges that God is there, Hodiah Elohim Otcha, God has made known this to you, and there is Ein Navon V'Chacham Kamocha, there is no one as wise and great as you, and now I am going to let you be right under me. There is nothing is going to be above you except my own seat of command. And let's just look at this nice little summary. Once Joseph learned to interpret other people's dreams, now his own dreams can come true. What were his own dreams? That people were going to bow down to him, right? Now it's actually going to happen. And now Joseph is ready to reface his brothers, but this time as someone who can see others, who also cares about others, and can see and help others with their dreams. I'm going to stop the share for a second. Also want to point out for those of you who are in the Yaakov class that this is similar in the sense that Yaakov had to do something before he could face Esav, right? He had to do something internally. He had to face his own fears. Here, Yosef's problem was more how he related to other people, right? He separated himself too much from them. He saw himself as too superior to them. And Yosef had to actually work through being able to see himself in relation to others in a different way before he then could face his brothers. So Yaakov has his thing with the Malach, and then he can face Esav. Yosef has his whole process of growth through Paro and through the butler and the baker, the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ophim, before he can then face his brothers. So just want to pause here if anyone has any questions or comments. All right.
Hello, can I ask a question?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so at the end, we're not really up to it yet, but because the topic I'm assuming is teshuva, at the end, Yosef tells his brothers, don't worry, I'm not going to do anything to you. Everything was a divine plan for God. But I always learned that when you do teshuva, I don't think it's enough. Part of the process is to change your ways, but you have to admit your sin. And he never admits his wrongdoing about how he acted towards the brothers. So is that true teshuva for us? Do we have to actually say this is what we did, or can we just change our ways? Is that enough?
It's a great question. It's really interesting about this story because there's actually teshuva happening on both sides. So on the one hand, Yosef needs to do teshuva, which is what we're focusing on, which is he needs to realize how he sees himself in position and relationship to others in order to make amends with his brothers. And the other side is that the brothers themselves have to do teshuva for throwing their brother in a pit and lying about it and, you know, making their dad miserable for many, many years. And there's actually a lot of mefarshim that focus on that part of teshuva, and then they bring in exactly what you're saying. You need to acknowledge what you did, and in some ways acknowledging what you did is being in the same situation and not doing it again. And a lot of the mefarshim talk about how when they're not willing to give up Binyamin, that actually is complete teshuva. I think it's the Abarbanel specifically who says that. So that's one. So one answer to your question might be no. I think the answer is no. It's not enough. You do have to say it. I think one way to see it is that maybe we can get a full teshuva picture by putting together the way that Yosef does teshuva and the way the brothers do teshuva, that they both help us understand. The other answer to your question is straight in Rambam's Hilchot Teshuva. Rambam starts Hilchot Teshuva with, you need to do vidui. You need to say what you did wrong. You need to say it orally. It's not enough just to think it. You actually do need to say it. So since we're looking at Rambam Hilchot Teshuva as our guide, I would say that you are correct that in order to do full teshuva according to the Rambam, you do need to admit it. And that may be something that is lacking here. You're right. Yosef never specifically says, I was wrong when I did X, Y, or Z. He just lets his brothers know that he's not going to be mad at them anymore. So I think you are right to point that out. And what we're trying to do is looking at sort of more of the subtleties in the text and see if there's ways that we can see that even if Yosef didn't say it out loud, there are ways to see that he did grow and change through the process of the ups and downs in his life. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you very much.
Great. But yeah, Rambam would be very happy with your question. He would be very excited that you asked that question, and he would say, yes, I started my entire Hilchot Tshuva with exactly that point, that you do, if you do want to do complete Tshuva, you do need to say out loud what you did wrong. And Joel, I think that's a great point about the boar. Yes, the word boar comes up not only with the pit, but also in when he's in jail, the word boar comes up. And that's a great way to use a linguistic cue to put them together, that it's only when, you know, at this point when Paro summons Yosef, that he is effectively rescued from the pit. I think that's a very interesting linguistic parallel. So thank you. All right. Any other questions before we see? So remember, Yosef hasn't met his brothers yet. He's done a bunch of growth. And now we need to see what happens when they come together. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. Let's continue. So now Joseph is ready to meet his brothers. So we know Joseph's dreams are coming true. He is now the person that other people are bowing down to. And specifically true, when the brothers are also part of a famine, they need food. Because of Joseph's leadership, Egypt has food, but no one else does. And they come down to him. And the brothers come and they bow down to him. So what's going to happen? Well, if the whole time we were talking about how one of the biggest problems between the brothers was that there was too much distance between them, a lot of distance that maybe Yaakov put there, maybe Yosef put there, right? So there's a lot of distance there. And so much so that it's possible when Yaakov and Yosef were trying to make things better, Bayeruoto Merachok, they still saw him at a distance, but Taramikrav, before he could come closer. So what happens here? We were saying that Yehuda was going to make a heroic visit in our story, or a heroic action in our story. When the brothers are talking to each other, it is at this moment that the relationship starts to really become repaired. When what happens, it says, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda close to Yosef. And it's when Yehuda came close and when he's able to talk to Yosef in more vulnerability and talk about, yes, we have a father. Yes, here's a youngest brother. Also, this is what happened to our other brother. This is how the father reacts to him. When Yehuda is able to actually come close and tell him in vulnerability and authenticity what is happening to him, that is when things start to really heal. And I highlighted here, v'yavater hu levato, which is a description they're using for Binyamin. And the reason why is for those of you who are in the first year, how does the whole interaction between Yaakov and the Malach start, right? V'yavater Yaakov levato. And we said there was a lot of parallels between the two stories. So here's just a linguistic parallel again between the two stories. Now, Vayigash elav Yehuda, we all know in a relationship, if one person comes close, what do you need the other one to do? For the first person not to back away, you need the other person to come close too. Vayomer Yosef el achav, Yosef then turns to the rest of the brothers and he says, Gishuna, come close to me. Gishuna elai. And Vayigshu, they came close. So there's a lot of Vayigashing happening. coming close. And it is when the brothers come close, when it says Vayigshu, Vayomer, then Yosef says, Ani Yosef Achechem. He doesn't say, I am Yosef the ruler, or I am Yosef the dreamer, or I am Yosef now in charge, you do what I say. He says, no, Ani Yosef Achechem. And Yosef assures them, which he's going to do a few times, that it is because of what you did by sending me here, that God has given me this position in order to eventually save you. And really interestingly, if we look at where he tells the brothers to live, he tells them to live in Goshen. Let's look back at that word. You can't help but see in Goshen, Gishuna. He literally tells them to live in a place that has the words Vayigash in them. We thought that was maybe just a little far-fetched. Why does he tell them to live in Goshen? Vahayita karov Eli, because I want you to be close to me. Ata ubanecha, ubanei banecha, tonecha, kol asher lecha. I want you to all be very close to me. Vayinashek l'kol acha, vayivach aleihem, then they kissed and they hugged, vacharechen, dibru echav ito. Now that they have all come closer to each other and that they, and that Yosef is not holding on top of them, if he ever wanted to hold something on top of them, it's way more powerful than I had a dream you were going to bow down to me, is you're actually bowing down to me and I actually am in control right now. But Yosef does not hold that between them. In fact, when it describes the word davar comes back, when it describes how they talk to each other, it's dibru echav ito. They talked basically at the same level. And finally, I think it was Joan who maybe mentioned this. At the very end, after Yaakov dies, the brothers get all nervous. Maybe Yosef actually didn't want to really rule over us, because he knew that it would hurt Yaakov. It would hurt our father to see that. But maybe now that Yaakov has passed away, maybe now he's going to really take things out against us and hold it against us, all the things we did to him. So when the brothers say that to him, you know, we just want to assure you that, you know, our father really did want you to be nice to us, even after he died. Vayavach Yosef b'tvar amelav. When Yosef hears this, that they have any assumption or worry that he actually is not really going to act like a brother to them, he cries over these words. There's our word again. The brothers do bow down to him again. And Yosef says to them, Al tira'u, please do not be worried. Ki hatachat Elokim ani, because I am under God. Now Yosef was the one who kept putting himself above others, even when he was 17, right? I'm above my brothers. Everyone's bowing down to me. And now when Yosef actually is in charge, when he is the, you know, second to the king, when people are bowing down to him, how does he see himself? He sees himself not as above everyone, but as hatachat Elokim ani, but specifically as under Hashem. You thought that you were doing bad to me, but really God had this great plan. And through my being in this position, I have the ability to keep you all alive, right? I have this whole plan where I'm going to make sure that you have food. Vata al tirau ani echalkel etchem. I will make sure that you have food, that you have sustenance, and your children. Which also, if we think back to the little Simba, I just can't wait to be king. Yosef originally thought it's going to be so great to be king because everyone's going to bow down to me. That's what being king is about. But when he's actually king, he realizes, or second to the king, he realizes that the purpose of the power is to really make sure that everybody, especially his brothers, have the food that they need in order to survive. And finally, we see Vayidaber al Libam, that after all this, the brother who started by giving Dibatam Ra'ah and all the Davars that went awry, that he gave, that others gave about him, it all ends with Vayidaber al Libam, which translation translates to speaking kindly to them. So thinking back to what this could mean for the tshuva process, I think it can mean a bunch of things. I think that, and I'd love to hear what you think. One interpretation, and then I'd love to hear your ideas. I think one thing it's teaching us is that a lot of times when we look at others, I'll get to the chat in a second. When we look at others, if we see ourselves as apart from them or as separate from them, it's too easy to then see ourselves as above them. And when we see ourselves as above them, then we automatically interpret their actions negatively. And we see that in the Rambam. The Rambam says one of the worst things you can do is be porish min tzibor. Even when the tzibor is being bad, one of the worst things you can do is to take yourself away from the community, which starts by seeing yourself as separate from the community. And that it's only someone who's within the community and who's beloved by the community who can actually help the community get them closer to tshuva. That it's the person who sees them, the person that knows them, that the word I believe that we used in the very beginning was understands them. He understands the people, the conditions, the circumstances. It's when someone is from within, when they're closer, that they are much more able to work with the people and to make things better with them. So as we're looking to do our own tshuva process, I know I will be trying to think about, you know, in what relationships do I have where I maybe too far, where maybe it can be healed through talking, you know, through trying to understand more, through asking questions more. You know, what are ways that I can do to get closer to other people? And I think as a society, you know, we're in a time where we really get a really good view of people from a distance, right? Social media especially is really a way that we see people far away. We see what they post, we see what they write, we can respond, and all the times we're really far apart. Maybe we're using 140 characters. And, you know, in today's day and age, when there's so much polarization and there's so much my camp versus your camp, you know, how much more can be accomplished if we engage in dialogue, if we engage in asking questions, if we engage in trying to understand the other side better, not to agree on everything, but hopefully just for the purposes of understanding. I'd love to hear any of your comments about the Yosef story, about this idea with tshuva, or anything else. Sandra, you want to start?
Yeah, so I posted something in the chat. I just want to go a little further here.
Great.
I think that there's no question, and you pinpointed that Yosef goes through a process of tshuva to a certain level. But I also believe that there's a lot lacking in his process of tshuva. And I think, you know, the minute he says to his brothers, don't worry, this was Hashem's plan, there is an underlying saying there, which he doesn't say, but it's there. It wasn't my fault either. It was Hashem's plan. You know, it's not my fault that I had those dreams, and it's not my fault that those dreams were true, and it's not my fault that... So I think that there is the lack of confession that was brought up earlier, I think is very telling. He doesn't take responsibility for it. To a certain extent, he repairs the relationship, but it's Hashem's plan. And I think that we in our lives have to be very careful with that, because we also do that every now and then. You know, well, I didn't mean to do it. It wasn't my fault. It's not my responsibility. It's because it was raining, or it's because, you know, we find reasons not to take responsibility. And I think that we can't just let that go in this story.
I think that's a great point. And I think it's building on what Joan said before, that yes, there are things that we can learn from this story that will help us in our tshuva process. And there are things that we can look at and see that are lacking. So I think you're both pointing out, yes, he never actually sees his own role, right? He's able to see others, but he may not have actually been able to see his own role in the process. He never apologizes for, you know, for the things that he did initially. So I think that's a great point. And that's one of the great things about Sefer Bereishit and all of the Torah, is that the Avot and all the characters are not perfect. And that's why, you know, a lot of the Mefarshim dig into, well, how can we understand this in a good light? And then sometimes how do we learn something not so good, or what happened in the future that maybe because they didn't, you know, do the complete process. So I think that's a really, really great point. Any other points anyone want to bring up verbally? I see a question in the chat. Can I repeat the connection between Goshen? So what I was saying is that the word Vayigash, and especially Gishuna, is very, very much sounds like the word Goshen. So when Yosef is telling them to live in Goshen, especially because it uses the words, live in Goshen because it's karov elai, because it's close to me, we can see that as an extension of Yosef trying to keep the distance minimal to keep the closeness with his brothers. Yeah, thank you for that question. Yes, and Joel is pointing out, I'm just looking at Joel's. Joel is pointing out, I'm going to summarize it, that there is some things that Joseph does as viceroy that is not very admirable. And that is very true, that if we actually look at the text, he does kind of make Egypt sort of a welfare state where almost everyone except his brothers have to give up like all rights to their own property. And it becomes, you know, the king's property. And it's not actually so great for Yosef. So I think for the people of Egypt. So I agree with that. And here again, it's ways that we can, you know, what can we look at the story and learn from? And what can we look at the story that wasn't great and learn from that? You know, there's a lot of negative that happens after Yosef dies. And, you know, how much of that was because of this system that he set up that wasn't very positive. So I think it's important to look at all aspects of it. Any other questions?
I thought that they went to Goshen, or they were, you know, he suggested that they go to Goshen because that was far away from the Egyptians, and that way that the cultures might not interact as much as they could if they were more, you know, in the middle of the Egyptian culture.
Yeah, I think there's different, there's a few reasons probably why they went to Goshen. One of them, as you say, it's separate. Another one was that they made their living off of shepherding, and to the Egyptians, the sheep were actually godly. So it would actually be really, it would be really hard for the Egyptians, or just it would be disgraceful in their eyes for them to see the way that they treated sheep. So for that reason also, Yosef told them to live at Goshen. And I think there's also what to look at in terms of the play of words. I think all of those things, you know, can be true at the same time. So again, not a perfect story. You're all right for pointing out the parts of it that are not perfect. Yet what can this story teach us, especially if we look at it metaphorically in terms of what happens when you're merachok, ubeterem yikrav, versus what happens when you're vayigash? I think that there's a lesson here that all of us can learn. I know I myself can learn, and hopefully it'll help us be, you know, more vayigash, closer to the completion of the tshuva process as we ourselves get closer to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So wishing you all Shana Tova. The next and last session is going to be with Dr. Rebecca Winter next Monday, same time, same place.
2 weeks, two Mondays.
Oh, two Mondays. Sorry.
Next Monday's Erev Rosh Hashanah. I think that's not a great time.
Not a good time. Not a good time.
I mean, it's a good time for tshuva, but not a good time for a class on tshuva. This is like theoretical tshuva. Then we got to do practical tshuva. So that's also theoretical. Whatever. Okay. Anyways, that yes. Thank you. By the way, you know, in the RCA Art Scroll Sitter, that goes back to the 80s where Saul Berman wrote the introduction. You know, have you seen it? So he talks on Vayigash, the three times that Vayigash is mentioned in Chumash. Can take a look. You know, they put out a separate RCA Sitter back in the 80s. Anyway, so just talking to the Vayigash, but that's besides by Yosef. But anyway, anybody wants to take a look? I don't remember the whole article, but he goes through the different articles. That's his introduction to the whole notion of a sitter, Vayigash, that we're approaching God when we daven. Anyways, thank you very much. Shana Tova, Ktiva V'Chatima Tova, and all the best, and hope things are well in the capital of our southern neighbors, and whatever. We should have a good year for all of us, a healthy year, safe, healthy, and a more normal year, the way it used to be a couple of years ago. Anyways, okay, 8:30 tonight, Mark Shapiro on Shaul Lieberman, or Shaul Lieberman. Tomorrow morning, Rav Aaron Adler. I went through this at last class, so it's all on the website. Tomorrow morning, Rav Aaron Adler on Rav Soloveitchik on Rosh Hashanah. The two Yom HaDins, re-experience of celebration, talking tomorrow to two Yom HaDins. On Wednesday, Benny Gazzone is talking to Nutana Tokev. And then we have our special Shir 115 on with Rabbi Alex Israel on the shofar. What's still listening to on the shofar. He sent out that last yesterday to register. And the rest is Shirim during the week. Okay, everybody have a wonderful day. We hope to learn with you soon. And invite a friend and have us join and be well, everybody. And thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you all.